Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The Sharks pull out the victory in regulation with a clutch goal by Jonas Donskoy, who is in fact returning for his first game back since being on the IR. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Teal Town USA After Dark. I am Eric Landy, and I am joined by AJ Strong. AJ, how are you doing?
Doing all right tonight.
Well, if you want to be a part of the show, please go ahead and follow us along in the YouTube chat or on Twitter using the hashtag TealTownUSA. Make sure you're following the TealTownUSA Twitter account. We're also on Facebook, SoundCloud, and Instagram. But for tonight, we'll be taking your questions from the YouTube chat and from Twitter. Well, the Sharks really pull out quite a big victory against a Pacific Division rivalry. And you know what? They get the 2 points, and they actually get a 4-point swing because they don't allow Calgary to get any kinds of points. I mean, this game looked destined to go to overtime, but the Sharks just somehow just pull it out. I mean, AJ, what's your first thoughts?
Thought they started off slow. To be honest with you, I thought they started off a little slow. And I was kind of surprised by that because, you know, they've had more than a few days off to rest up and work on some stuff. So I was a little disappointed with the slow start. Obviously, Frolik gets the that first one unassisted in the first 5 minutes of the game. So I was just thinking maybe it's not going to be the best night, especially since we know Smith to be a Sharks killer from his days with the Coyotes. Oh, I'm sorry, the Desert Dogs. And so I was a little nervous about that, but dude, it was all about the you know, I don't care what Hedekin says, it was all about the bottom six. I don't care if somebody wants to call them the second six, it's forever be known as the bottom six. And the bottom six got it done today. First line was marginal at best. I saw Thornton with a couple boneheaded plays tonight, especially one where gets the puck in the neutral, gets into the O zone with a bit of speed, looking like a potential 2-on-1. And for some reason, it was like almost muscle memory where you just hit the brakes.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what the hell are you doing? At the very least, get the puck deep. And instead, it ended up going back the other way. So, yeah, that third line tonight was the first line, in my opinion.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we'll run over it pretty soon. But my first impressions were the special teams, especially that first unit power play looked really sloppy tonight. Just looked like they were regressing back to their same old ways, where it's just very slow, plodding. Nobody really wants to take that shot on the goal. And immediately when that second line, that second power play unit stepped onto the ice, they were just funneling pucks to the net. Tierney, Donskoy, and Meyer. I mean, they just ransacked the net and they just will that puck in there. That go ahead and ties us up. Well, actually, Timo Meyer scores in the first period. The second period is when that power play goal came in. But the Timo Meyer was from Tierney and Donskoy. And then in that second period, Chris Tierney scores his eighth goal of the year. And that one's assisted by Meyer and LeBanc. That third period was kind of a Sharks weathering the storm a little bit, of bending but not breaking. They did break for one goal, but it could have been a lot worse. What do you think about the overall start of the third period, AJ?
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. And I don't even know that it should have been I don't know that that should have been a tying goal, because just to go back to that Frolik goal for a second, I mean, he makes a bad play, gets the puck essentially taken from him, and he'd essentially screened Dell on that. But if you look at it, I mean, that was just a wide five-hole shot. I think Dell most times needs to have that, even with Heed, you know, 10 feet in front of him. But that said, Dell, and I mentioned this on Twitter, and we've seen it so much this season, Dell will let that first one in, and then he pretty much just shuts the door. And for the most part, he did tonight. Gaudreau got lucky. What are you going to do?
Yeah, that Johnny Gaudreau score in the third period, 7:39 into the third period. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, first off, Vlasic, I mean, it hops over his stick at the blue line. You're breaking a two-on-one the other way. I mean, Braun is playing it really well. I mean, he's playing the puck carrier. Vlasic even, I mean, is almost all the way up on and almost gets back into the play. Unfortunately, it looks like Hathaway just makes a really strong I thought it was Monahan who made that pass over. But anyways, that pass over just came even with Braun and Vlasic on the puck carrier, and Gaudreau just puts it into an open net. I mean, you know, that's going to go in 10 times out of 10. I mean, only the great team of Solani could miss something like that wearing a Sharks uniform. But no, I mean, unfortunately, I mean, for Dell, that one, sometimes the breaks just don't go your way, and the break didn't go for him that way. The Sharks looked like they were just kind of hemmed in their own zone, probably up until about the 15-minute mark of that third period. And then you started to see the Sharks kind of press a little bit. Even just looking at the scoring play, it's Jonas Donskoy's eighth goal from Thornton and Braun. It was a changing of lines there. I mean, and Thornton and Donskoy don't normally play on a line together. So, you know, they caught Calgary a little flat-footed, and they caught Mike Smith just not squeezing the pads together enough. And luckily, the referee did not whistle that down. I mean, we've seen the early whistles really, really quickly this year, but they let that one go. He, credit to the referee, he saw that puck just sitting there. Jonas Donskoy puts it in, and you know what? I mean, one hell of a game to pull that out. I mean, he's just looking over the stats, shots on goal. Sharks have 29 shots. Flames have 34. Faceoffs, 53% in favor of the Sharks. Power play, Sharks go 1-for-3. Flames go 0-for-3. Hits, 7 for the Sharks, 20 for the Flames. Of course, we all know that's a mystified stat. Blocks, 14 for the Sharks, 14 for the Flames. The one that you know, I kind of always harp on is the giveaways, and the Sharks are doubling down on that versus the Flames, and they give up the puck 10 times, and the Flames give up the puck 5. And when you get that really high level of giveaways, it means that they're tired. And I tell you what, that first line looked, outside of Carlson, looked really slow tonight, and it looked exposed against the Monahan and Gaudreau line. What did you think about that?
Absolutely. There's let's admit what it is, guys. The Joes are on the wrong side of the 30. They're looking at the horizon. They've lost a step. That's what happens. And again, I think over the course, now tonight, Pavelski and Thornton both get over 18 minutes of time on ice. The most amount of ice time tonight for forwards, which makes you kind of wonder why, when clearly the third line with Meyer, Tierney, and Donskoy were the ones that were getting it all done. I would have rewarded them with more ice time. And somebody in the chat, if you have any questions, by all means, throw them out to us in the chat. And somebody pointed out, and I kind of piggyback on something that Kevin Kurz tweeted out, Rob Iman asking, is it time to sell high on Tierney? And the Kevin Kurz mentioning that, boy, it looks like the Sharks might have, you know, screwed the pooch by not signing Tierney long term in the offseason rather than basically giving him. Did he go to arbitration?
No, so he was a few days away from arbitration. He signed his arbitration deal. That's kind of a slap in the face to a player. I mean, most players, when they go that far, you know, they will normally go to arbitration, but Tierney decides to take the deal, his ARB deal. And I think he's at, what, $700,000 this year or something?
Yeah.
So, you know, on the one hand, it's good to see that Tierney is really proving the organization wrong. But it's also, you know, it is kind of bad on the Sharks because they don't, they didn't see him factoring in to the, into the equation, basically the long-term plans. But as we saw earlier in the week with Ryan Carpenter, who was protected in the expansion draft, I mean, clearly Tierney has risen his level again. He's superseded most of the prospects in the system, and that's really good to see. I mean, when you have that kind of push from within, a guy that by all accounts was kind of down and out, going to be the fourth line center, push back, and really, I mean, he's on pace for career year. That's really good to see.
Yeah, but I also think we need to add in that how many times when Tierney was on that fourth line, was he dragging around anchors like with names like John Scott and Michael Haley? And
oh,
you know,
of course. Yeah.
I mean, you, now that he's playing with talent, he's able to show that he has talent. So, I mean, if he continues this, I mean, call me nuts. I don't think that the Sharks are going to go, if the Sharks make the playoffs, it's not fait accompli. I mean, we see what's going on with LA. We see what's going on with Vegas. I don't know that that's going to change. I mean, it seems like they're getting strong. At least LA is getting stronger as the season progresses, which is frightening. But Vegas at this point still showing no signs of slowing down. Calgary, this is a huge game for the Sharks tonight because, as Landy mentioned, 4-point swing, and it's the first of six straight against Pacific Division rivals, and you've got Vancouver and Calgary literally nipping at the heels in the standings of the Sharks. So this was a huge game. Do the Sharks go into the playoffs? We'll see what happens, but what do you think if we're just outside the trade deadline? And I'm not going to get into the whole if the playoffs started today, but if we get just outside of the trade deadline, if the Sharks are outside looking in, Thornton is FA after this. Tierney, RFA after this. I mean, maybe you consider saying, you know what, we're outside looking in. It's finally time to rebuild, you know, build for the future, because this is, it's not going to happen. And we let Marlowe walk, and Marlowe's performing great in Toronto. Wouldn't it have been nice if the Sharks would have gotten something out of that deal? Maybe you can get something for Thornton. You should hopefully be able to get something for Tierney. Hey, maybe you can package Tierney with Bodker and get that contract out of the books too.
Right. And I think what was kind of interesting, I mean, we were talking about this the last time we were on, what day was that? I guess that was Tuesday. Monday. And the thing that was kind of interesting, you know, that I was bringing up was that Tierney is 23. I mean, we're not even entering in peak prime years yet. 24, 25 is really when the peak begins. That crest kind of starts to, we're on the upswing, the uptick. So, for me, at least, an RFA, you've got to keep that commodity around. And it was interesting because there was another piece that came out from Pashelka, or it was Gackle. It was one of the two, talked to Doug Wilson. And Doug Wilson basically came in and said, look, we're not mortgaging the future. No core pieces that are young are going to be sold off at the trade deadline for another shot.
Oh, now, yeah. I'm not saying another shot. I'm not looking to move Tierney for a rental to try to make a run. I'm talking about finally saying, you know what, Doug Wilson, I mean, you've under your era, the Sharks have missed the playoffs, what, twice? So, I mean, that's a hell of a run, but it's time to restock, man. Like, you had all that time with Marlowe and Thornton and Nabby and all those pieces that were here for so long. Maybe it's time to just consider, you know, we're going to suck for a year or two to, you know, it's the whole, let's take one step backward to take three steps forward. And we saw that a couple years ago after the reverse sweep, and they made some, you know, you saw that they moved Klo and got some big value out of it. Doug Murray got value out of it. And what happened? They sucked the following year. And then the year after that, they went to the final.
Right.
You know, so right. maybe it's time to look at something like that. I want to get to something that Skyler said. Tierney took a step back last year and now is playing on a show me contract. And I've said this, and several people have said this. You give me a team filled with guys on the last year that they're playing for a deal, and I'll win the championship every year.
You well, know what I mean?
And,
yeah.
And Bearded Sharks guy also mentioning, you know, Hurdle is also, you know, at the end of his two-way bridge deal. So they're going to have to make a decision on that too. A lot of decisions. But remember, Thornton's $8 million comes off the books.
Joel Ward's $3.275 million comes off the books.
Yeah, and maybe you consider buying out Bodker.
I, you know what, you maybe you think about it. If there's some way that they could probably move, not probably, but if there's some way that they could move Paul Martin for something, you know, even if they have to retain half that salary, you know, trying to get rid of that and freeing up some cap space there. I mean, you've got the big one is that Martin Jones's deal kicks in. And Brent Burns is $8 million already kicked in. Who's the Mark Edward Vlasic $7 million
yeah,
deal kicks in. So
you're almost trading Thornton's deal for Vlasic's.
Right. But so then you think about okay, well, how much more room does the Sharks have? Right now they're at what $6 million in cap space?
No, right now it's $4.5 million.
Oh, right now they're at $4.5 million in cap space. Current cap space, 7.4. Okay, that's because Martin's on the conditioning set.
Oh, yeah. Current 7.4, projected 4.5.
Right, and I think that one's because of Paul Martin.
And Morocco pointing out in the chat, Chloe and Murray were already gone from 4.13 and 14. And it's not that I'm talking about when they were gone. I'm talking about the value that Wilson was able to get back for that.
Right.
That's one of those weird things that too many times I've bitched and and pissed and moaned and complained that I felt like the Sharks potentially overpaid for certain players and
right.
a couple right. of these where I just go, you know what, that was a good deal.
Yeah, I mean, so to me, the person that if the Sharks are on the outside looking in come deadline time, I see one of two guys that I say, okay, what can I can get some, maybe you get really something good back. Move Pavelski. I mean, Pavelski yeah. has got 1 year left. After this year, he's got 1 million or 1 year left at $6 million. And he's 33, proven goal scorer. Now, of course, right now he's not doing well. I mean, and I think it's been pretty much it's a dirty little secret of the Sharks that everybody knows that he's playing hurt.
But the thing is, Pavelski, proven playoff performer.
Right.
Who wouldn't want that for a run?
Right. So
you know, maybe the Sharks find somebody to overpay for a rental.
Right. And you know, I look at what I mean, just look going over into the East, because the Sharks really like to you know, dance with the East partners. Washington could be a landing spot. I look over maybe I wouldn't say Toronto, because I think Pavelski's a little too slow, a little too plodding for that team. Maybe the Islanders. If the Islanders are still in it, do they try and make a run with Pavelski? If you want to go over into the Central, Nashville, I mean, that would be a nice little landing spot for Pavelski. Maybe you get some kind of defensive prospect back and you flip the defensive prospect, or St. Louis, if they're going to gear up for a run. But to me, the guy, the cornerstone that you're going to be building around forward wise is going to be Logan. I mean, Logan has really shown that this is his team now. And I think it goes without saying that Hurdle is going to be re-signed. And I think he's going to be re-signed as that winger for Couture, because mm-hmm. those two have played really well. Hurdle, I think seeing him as a first line winger, that's not a bad spot for where he was drafted and what we got. I mean, yeah, we all went into his draft thinking, okay, he's going to be a number one center, but clearly he's better as a winger. I mean, clearly his offensive game is better as a winger.
You don't want to put him to defense and move Burns up to forward? Not kidding.
Right.
Kidding.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, going over who else? I mean, it's clear that Donskoy needs to be re-signed come July 1, get him that extension, because I mean, the kid had 2 points tonight and clearly was like within, I mean, he could have had 3 goals. I mean, just with how much he was on the puck tonight.
Well, and that's something that just to get back to the game for a second. I mean, we can sit here and pontificate and dream about, you know, if we could move this guy for that guy and blah, blah, blah. But let's be honest. I just want Bodker off this team yesterday. That's pretty much it. But look at tonight's goals. Not only did they come from one line, essentially, but where did they come from? I mean, Myers' opening goal was, I mean, that was all from getting in the paint.
Yep.
You know, who was the first guy on that one?
So it was Timo from Tierney.
No, it was Tierney. Yeah.
So Tierney brings it into the zone.
Yeah. Tierney brought it in, crossed through. It looked like Donskoy almost had it, but Meyer slams it in. Talking a goal. And that's not an easy goal to score. I mean,
it was backhand by Meyer.
But not only that, the fact that it was like maybe a foot away from the goal line and at that, you know, that very harsh angle. So, I mean, that was a fantastic goal, but almost, I mean, within 5 feet, 6 feet of the paint, you look, the Tierney goal and the Donskoy goal, both right there on the doorstep. When was the last time you saw that? Because we're so used to seeing Heed and Burns just firing bombs, these, you know, one-time shots that miss the mark and then end up going the other way or leading to, you know, worse yet, leading to, you know, a two-on-one or some sort of breakout for the opposing team. The fact that all three of those goals came from, you know, being in the slot in the dirty zone, God, I hope that is a sign of things to come out. I hope it's a wake-up call a little bit for the team where PDB can point to that and say, you know, look, we found success getting in front of, you know, getting dirty. So let's keep getting dirty.
And it's a perfect segue. I mean, perfect segue into look at who scored the goals tonight. Look at how young those players are. First off, Tierney coming in at 23, 24. Chris Tierney. That's 23. Meyer 21 and Donskoy 25. I mean, yeah. And the same thing again with the second goal where it's Tierney scores it. It's for Meyer and LeBanc.
Yeah. LeBanc just turned 22 a day or two ago.
Yeah, exactly. And then Donskoy from Thornton and Braun, that one's a little bit of an aberration, but Donskoy was really the one that got to that got to Mike Smith and saw that puck was still loose. So basically what I'm trying to say is, Tierney has maybe the makings of a second line center, and you know, call it a pipe dream. I know that people have said, "Oh, that's kind of a high ceiling for him," but not if he's playing at this level.
Well, and not if he's playing with talent,
right?
You know, that's the thing. And let me get to the chat real quick. Bearded Sharks guys, Bodker and Hansen traded for a bag of pucks and tickets to the next big concert at the new team arena. Yeah, that would be nice. Now, and Morocco jumping on a point that I keep talking about, but nobody cares, is that just that I think it's funny how the league wants to expand again when they have several teams struggling to fill seats right now. I've been saying that, but it doesn't matter. You know, if an owner wants to have a team, if he just wants to own that team, let him own that team. If he doesn't want to try to turn a profit or whatever the point is, fine. But the whole thing is, as long as the NHL gets that $500 million entrance check,
$650 is what the last I heard was.
Oh, okay. So either way, you get, you know, dollar bills, y'all. You get that. The NHL is going to be like, I don't care how many seats you sell. We got our money.
All right. So very interesting that you bring that up, because I was listening to the new, the new Greg Wyshynski, I think it's ESPN On Ice podcast today. Very, very interesting. If we do get a Seattle expansion, do we see Arizona moving to the Central?
They'd have to.
As the dirty little secret that Arizona might relocate to Houston, because we know that the NHL has really had a hard-on for Houston.
Yeah, I don't really know why that is. But anyway, I mean, you think it's hard to maintain good ice in Arizona. At least it's dry there. And right. Houston is just as – it gets just as hot, but then you factor in the humidity.
Yeah.
I mean, dear Lord, ask Dallas about trying to keep a good sheet of ice. So, I mean, it's clear Arizona – if Seattle is granted an expansion team, it's clear Arizona's the one that has to go. They're the only one not in the Pacific time zone. Well, I shouldn't say that. Obviously,
they have Calgary, that weird – they have that weird daylight savings, non-daylight savings thing.
But well, who cares about that? But I mean, I was saying that they're the only ones that aren't in the time zone, but that's incorrect because obviously Calgary and Edmonton. But no, you know, now that we've had realignment, there's no way in hell that the NHL is going to break up the Western Canada triangle of hockey between Vancouver, plus, Calgary, and Edmonton.
And then you add Seattle to that mix. There ain't no way in hell that they're gonna break that up. So. And
that's what I'm saying. You've got the Western Canada triangle. You've got the California triangle of hockey. Those are not going to be broken up.
And I could maybe see
no matter how much we want LA move to another division.
Right. Maybe Vegas going to the Central. I mean, that was kind of nah. Well,
too close to LA, too close to Anaheim. I mean, literally driving distance from LA.
Yeah, so I mean, unfortunately, I think Phoenix is going to get the short end of the stick, so to speak.
Well, not to mention the fact that Vegas, at least for the next 3 to 5 years, not going to have problems selling out their venue. Arizona doesn't know where they're going to play in 2 years. You know what I mean? It's Arizona's just been rife with problems. Just fine. If you can find, whether it's Houston, Kansas City could be another other option.
I mean, or do we go back to the three division setup and maybe make a Northwest division and, you know, have a Pacific division, excuse me, in some kind of like desert division or something. I mean, that, or a central division. I mean, that could be something interesting.
I wouldn't mind going back to, three divisions, but I think, you know, what they have now, it was such a pain in the ass to do realignment to begin with. I doubt that they'd be up for doing it again unless it coincided with a lockout or something that happened where they lost.
You said the L word.
Yeah, I know.
It's coming. It's coming.
The thing is, though, is right now we already have an unbalanced schedule. So, I mean, and the only way to me that if you can go to three – I mean, if you're saying three per East, three per West, then you need contraction. Somebody has to lead to get it back down to 30 teams. And who's.
We're at 30. We're currently
31 right now. Yeah.
So you either contract by one or you add one. And it looks like that.
But if you add one, though, it's still the case. If it remains this way, you either have to add one or two games to the regular season to make the schedule balance out, you know, because right now
there was already that winds kind of blowing to get the rein the schedule in. The players, you know, wanted to bring in the 82 game schedule because it's kind of a lot.
Well, I looked through and ran the numbers and it was basically you can play everybody in the East twice. Then you can play everybody in the Central twice, and then you can play everybody in your division four times with the exception of one team. And then that makes it – or I think five times with the exception of one team. So that makes it 82 games. And so it's like, well, then you should add one more game to balance that. Conversely, you could do it where it's, you know, the 32 games versus everybody in the East. Then you do three games against the Central – and then four games against everybody in your division. And you still have, in order to make that work, you have to add another game or two to the regular season. So it's the schedule, if they're going to do this alignment thing, like lock it down, but balance the schedule is part of it.
Right, right. And, you know, people are going through the chat and they're saying, oh, well, you know, the NHL doesn't like to move teams on a whim, yada yada yada, and that's very, very true. The other thing that we also got to keep in mind too is that all of these leagues, whether it be the Major League Baseball or whether it be the NFL or whether it be the NHL or MLS even, they love to have cities in their back pockets. And the reason why they like to have these cities in the back pockets is exactly what we're seeing played out in Calgary, where it's the threat of moving a team gets that that market appetite for getting a new arena. They use it as a leverage position. So you have to have at least one or two markets that are teetering on, you know, being able to sustain a franchise in order to have that that crowbar wedge, that real threat that, okay, this team might move.
Yeah, but what we're seeing
playing that in Calgary right now.
But what we've seen, though, seeing that play out in Calgary, but conversely in the NFL, it's working in the opposite. The teams are threatening to move, and they're being told, go ahead. You know, we saw the Rams go back to L.A., saw the Chargers move up to L.A. We're seeing the Raiders go to Vegas. You know, some of these guys are like, we're tired of being bent over a barrel about, you know, this type of stuff. You want to move then? Fine. You know?
Right. And I mean, that brings up another really key point. We've got a couple of really ailing franchises. I mean, Calgary is not an ailing franchise, but they need a new arena.
And yeah, I mean, you talk about a market with support.
Right.
It's
definitely Calgary. The other one, though, that is really it's kind of always been in a weird spot is Ottawa. And Ottawa desperately needs a new arena, not because their arena is old currently, but because it's in Kanata. It's
what, in a bad location.
Yeah. It's what, 20 miles, 18 miles.
Now, didn't Ottawa come in like with Anaheim, like a year or so after San Jose?
Yes. Ottawa came in that next wave with the Ducks.
Okay. So did they get a brand new building like San Jose did when they came in?
Yes, they did.
Okay. So
it's, and they got, I think it was that land that they got some kind of really sweetheart deal with it. Maybe Ian might be able to tell us how exactly they got that. It's either they got a tax break on it or they were gifted the land or Melnick had the land. I don't remember exactly what the deal with the land was, but they got a really good deal with it. And that's why they made it there.
But I'm just putting it into the case of where I'm kind of comparing it, obviously, just because of length with San Jose. So it's not that Ottawa's building is ancient. I mean, I haven't seen it, so I don't know. But, you know, San Jose, even though it's like, what, third oldest building in the league, which is very hard to believe, especially when you go to it, because the SAP has aged very well.
Oh, because it was a unique and really forward-thinking design when it came out, and that has lasted and really put its mark on the NHL as kind of a, hey, this is a prototype of what a building should look like for the new millennia. So that's why it's really held up well.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and the Sharks Sports and Entertainment have kept it up really well. They put a lot of money into it over the years.
Well, I was going to say, and it's also the fact of location, location, location. I mean, they put it in a prime spot right in downtown, and you know, we're look at where everybody's building. I mean, it's always like in the heart of the city now. That's where everybody wants to be. It's not Dallas anymore, where, you know, where the Rangers play, where the Cowboys play, is it's a drive outside of Dallas.
And the NHL doesn't have the ability to get that kind of a reach because, you know, people go to hockey games on a whim, you know, especially with a Sharks game. Like, you just hop on the StubHub and, you know, you're at San Pedro and they, hey, the Sharks playing. Yeah. Okay. Fuck it. Let's go walk down the street. And, you know, you can't do that in Arizona. You have to make a drive, a trek out there. You can't do that in Ottawa. Yeah, to some extent, you can't do that with Florida in Sunrise. And I think that that's another, a really another franchise that desperately needs to do something, whether it needs to be put a new arena downtown or move the team completely. We keep seeing it and seeing it. Even when they're good, they're not able to draw well. That's an ailing franchise that needs something done. I mean, you look at the people that have done it right, Nashville. Look at where that arena is. Look how good they draw.
Yeah. Well, and those are two that you could get into because Florida and Nashville let's be honest, Miami, there's a ton of stuff to do in Miami. And you've got basketball, you've got baseball, you've got football. Nashville, you have football is ubiquitous, you know. Tennessee, right. Come on. But Nashville is just, you know, I mean, it's a booming town. There's tons to do. Music City, hello people. So it's, you know, it's a very vibrant area. That's why I don't think it can compare with Calgary, because it's just the Flames and the Stampeders. And right. Let's be honest, Stampeders, not too many people are, you know.
The CFL does not draw like the NHL does in Canada.
Well, and there's no cross-pollination with the U.S., so it's not going to get the, you know, that kind of vibe. It just makes me wonder, like, what the hell? Like, you would hope the NHL would somehow try to involve themselves in keeping that franchise in Calgary, get something closer. I mean, I've heard so many stories, the Red Mile and all, and you just see every time there's I love watching the Sharks play at Calgary, just because that fan base impresses every time you watch, man. It's like 85% of the people in the seats are wearing, not only are they wearing jerseys, but they're wearing
the
red jerseys. Yeah. It's like, I wish we saw that. You know, the Sharks have been too busy trying to sell black jerseys and this. I would love it if you saw Sharks fans turn out in teal jerseys like that. That would just be insane.
Right. Which let's talk about this. And it's been, you know, it's kind of been interesting and very much a North American phenomena. But something that Hasso Plattner brought up a few years ago now was, why do we need to build new stadiums? Why can't we retrofit old stadiums? And you look at Seattle's potential stadium situation, they're redoing their stadium. They're putting $650 million to renovate and completely gut and rebuild the insides of the old
Key Arena.
Exactly. So why can't you do that with Calgary? I mean, that's such a cool architecture of a building. I don't know if anybody's seen the outside.
The Saddle Dome for a reason.
Exactly. So, you know, a total rebuild not necessarily needed. They could renovate the heck out of that and do it a really good job.
Yeah, so, I mean, look at Madison Square Garden. That building's been around for decades.
And look how beautiful that renovation came out. I mean, the way that they redid that roof was just off the wall idea, and it turned out beautiful. It really did.
You could even point to the arena. I don't know what the hell it's called now, because they change the name every 3 to 4 years. But where the Golden State Warriors play, you know, the arena in Oakland. That went through huge redevelopment, and they totally gutted it and redid the inside. You know, the Warriors played at the Tank for a year while that was going on.
Right.
So, I mean, in that, it was a huge change. Was I the biggest fan of it? I mean, I understand what they did, and they tried to make it a little more classy and whatnot, but you're talking, you know, I'm a kid who went to a lot of concerts at that arena during the 80s and, you know, early 90s before they made that renovation. And for that, I was kind of bummed out, because it was really cool for concerts there. But I can understand for sports, maybe not as cool, or they didn't have what we're seeing now and what we kind of saw just after the Tank was built, is this whole – VIP experience and this whole, you know, reaching out, wanting that corporate dollar. Because obviously, if that was, if the Sharks had more awareness of that, I guarantee you there'd be two rows of suites, you know, between the upper and lower deck. And there'd be a lot more niceties in that regard.
Well, you know, and that's a double-edged sword because you look at Toronto's building, you look at how full that is with corporate sponsorship, and it makes it stale. Makes it very generic, and it makes it very, what's the word, sterile.
Yeah, that's how I feel about Staples.
Right, and that exactly how you feel about Staples.
I mean, I don't want another Cow Palace, but you know what I'm saying.
Right, right. I think that that's why the Sharks Arena works so well, is because it is that mixture of, okay, it's got new architecture or nouveau architecture at the time. You know, it's got enough corporate sponsorships to be, you know, self-sustaining. And I think the only thing that I can say anything negative about the tank, the only thing, and this is just nitpicky, is the camera positioning for television. That's got to be the only problem. And the way that it's set up now, it's not so bad. But I know that when Hockey Night in Canada goes there, and I especially know for when they had all the extra cameras for the Stanley Cup, it was a problem. It was a problem. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just conditioned to it. The arena that drives me batty when it comes to camera positioning is
Rexall. Rexall did it for me, where you had that reverse camera where you're looking down into the penalty box instead of looking over it. You're looking at it. Yeah. That was kind of a unique experience.
That's not bad, but Dallas is the one that that drives me nuts all the time because it feels like the cameras are way too low.
Right.
You know, right. I wish some of the, I wish the NHL once in a while would consider maybe using like what you see in the NFL with that
Sky Cam. Yeah. I've said it so many times because you could get a really good directional shot looking right at the goalie and you could just look on like a 2-on-1. And you could just see from what the skater sees that perspective. I think that would be really cool as well.
And I've seen it a few times where they've done the replay where it's basically kind of a sky cam and they're showing like a breakout and you see, and like the screen, you know, they're showing the breakout coming from here down to here. And the way the camera will just flip. So the whole thing rotates. And I mean, it looks really cool. And I wish even tonight, Hedekin rolled, you know, was covering a couple replays and they had kind of a, you know, really high look at that. And I wish they would utilize that better because you can really see plays develop more and you can see what other guys are doing on the back end. And how many times do you see it where something's happening in the offensive zone and then you see the puck kick out right as a guy's coming out of the box and they go for the breakaway and they almost catch it late because, you know, that it's just such a narrow field. I would love to see them use that, or at least when are we going to get that option? When do we get the option to just choose what camera we want to watch? You know,
well, you can do that on NHL TV, but I think I know for the Canadian markets, they have a lot more camera angles that you can watch. But I know from the Sharks, it's either from the net cam or from the TV angles. But I know that they have that enhanced looking deal. But
I want a smart TV that I can, you know, I want that just built in for like every sporting event.
right. Bearded Sharks guy, they do the same thing with the Panthers to hide the empty seats. They're talking about the sky cam. That's rough. That's really rough for them. But let's kind of tie a little bit of a bow on this. I mean, Donskoy looks like he has not missed a beat. I was kind of worried about, you know, maybe labored breathing because of a rib injury, but looks really good. What'd you think of his first game back?
Oh, I mean, come on. It was phenomenal. And that's, you know, what I've said over the last five or six games have been like, you know, this is a team. Bodker missing. Does anybody notice? No. But Donskoy, that was clear. It was very clear that, you know, it was the team was just kind of, it wasn't the same without Don. He's a pivotal piece to the puzzle. And when you take him away, it's like a house of cards. You take out that key piece and it's going to fall. Whereas, you know, Bodker isn't even in the deck. So, yeah,
definitely. and then I want to put this out there. Best game as a Shark for Timo Meier in his young career?
Quite, you know, could in fact be.
Yeah, I think he was just a really big wrecking ball out there. And it's really good to see that, especially since his last demotion and call-up, he's been building every game. And I think maybe even that scratch, too, really helped him out. And LeBanc has also been a pleasant surprise up with Couture and with Hurdle. So that's allowed Donskoy to skate with Chris Tierney, which kind of lengthens that lineup a little bit. So when we do get Bodker back, oh, please, dear God, could you get Ward off and put Barkley in the middle of
well, see, that's the whole thing. I think when Barkley Goodrow is healthy, he obviously comes back. Whether it's – see, here's my problem. When Bodker is healthy, that likely means that Sorensen's going to go back down. Just right. Space-wise, you know.
And Sorensen was all over it tonight, by the way. Looked really good.
Well, he does have – you know, his speed is phenomenal. But when Goody and when Bodker come back I mean, I hope that they find a different – like, somebody should just, like – accidentally hit Bodker too hard in practice and keep him on IR, you know, just keep him on IR longer. So just get this guy off the damn team. But when Goody comes back, when everybody's healthy, there's going to be some key
decisions.
Yeah. That are going to have to be made. Especially
LeBanc can't go back now. He's now a waiver. He's got to hit waivers.
Yeah. So Sorensen's going to go down. Does Goodrow, though? Does Goodrow have to clear waivers?
Goodrow's got to pass through waivers, so I'll tell you who can go down. It says
that's it.
Sorensen, O'Regan, and Meier. Meier still has waiver exemption, but today was Kevin LeBanc's last game to be waiver exempt.
Oh, okay.
Joakim Ryan can also go down, which unfortunately that's going to happen when Martin comes back, unless somebody comes up with a mystery injury on the blue line. Unfortunately, as much as I love Joakim Ryan, I think he's going to go back down. I think he can probably do a little bit better helping out the Barracuda instead of just riding the Pine Pony up here.
I think Ryan could use a little bit more time there. I'm not happy. And this is a thing that just to kind of call back to something I said earlier is that Wilson, to me, in my opinion, has he has a tendency sometimes to overpay for things. And when I saw the contract for Paul Martin, the first thing in my mind was, are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, that last year was gonna suck. And we're seeing it, right? We're seeing it play out now.
Yeah. And it's like, I was like, you know what? 3 years I could have stomached. I was like, four. Are you kidding me?
And well, four, if they would have kept the money down, right? If they would have come in at around $4 million at 4 years, okay, I can understand that. Giving if you give that extra year, okay, you kind of take back. But I think what was happening was the year that Paul Martin was a free agent, it was pretty thin for blue liners. So they were going to have to overpay a little bit. And so they were overpaying for those first 2.5, 3 years. And then really they were going to have to stomach that last year, which I think everybody kind of saw that. I mean, maybe Martin retires. He could do that because he didn't sign an over 35 contract.
I don't know. I mean, 4 year deal, we're seeing him in the middle of his third year and I already want to get rid of him. So it's like, geez, you know, come on, Wilson, like, a 3 year deal I could have stomached, but this, this is ridiculous. So I would like to, wouldn't mind getting that almost $5 million off the books, but I digress. We'll send O'Regan down and Sorensen, those guys both go down when Goody and Bodker are back. And I, you know, keep, I just hope these kids, I mean, Goodrow, we saw in PDB's doghouse for so long. or to reference a Remenda term, Chateau Le Bow Wow. But was in PDB's doghouse forever and is finally breaking out of that. It's in these, the youth is, it just feels like it's starting to break through a little bit. Like Tierney came in with a chip on his shoulder.
Donskoy with that, looks like a completely different player than last year. Those shoulder injuries must have really hampered him. Hurdle taking a really strong step this year.
Well, because he's being played where he should have been played from the get-go.
Right. I think Timo Meier, I mean, knock on wood, starting to show why he was drafted so high. I think he's finally figuring it out. Knock on wood. The one that I'm circling, though, that's kind of still enigmatic is LeBanc.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And I think I think maybe he was a little taken up a little bit too early, given thrust a little bit too much, a little too early. But, you know, given that he's playing with Hurdle and with Couture, maybe that can foster him along a little bit. It wasn't a good idea to put him with the Joes.
Well, and we know that DeBoer loves his pairs. Right. You know, Pavelski, Thornton, Couture, Hurdle. And now it seems to be Tierney, Donskoy. So what, you know, how do you fit in these pieces around them? Because for the longest time, you know, we saw Hurdle with Couture and Donskoy, and that was a great line. But if Tierney and Donskoy find chemistry with Meier, it's like, yeah, let's keep that rolling. And especially if LeBanc can figure it out, or you put LeBanc, you flip LeBanc and Carlson. You have a Hurdle, Couture, and Carlson.
Right.
Decent. Hell, just, you know, put Ward up there with Thornton and Pavelski and just the AARP line or something.
All right. Well, I think it's about time to start wrapping up. So let's go around the league. The final game of the night the last game of the night just went final, excuse me. Wrapping around the league, the Golden Knights win 2-1 against the Penguins. Capitals.
Real deal, James Neal.
So the Golden Knights keep on swinging, and going over into the East, the Capitals beat the Bruins 5-3. The Flyers.
Ovechkin with 22 goals.
I love me some Ovechkin. I always have. Flyers over the Sabres 2-1 in the shit bowl, as it were. The Blue Jackets 6-4 over the Islanders. Blue Jackets really starting to come on strong. I mean, I know they got beat the other night, and Tortorella did Tortorella things.
Press conference ever.
Yeah, but
former Shark Tommy Grice taking the loss for the Islanders on that one.
Right. Going over to the Devils and Canadiens, the Devils unfortunately losing in overtime against the Canadiens 2-1. Duckies beat the Blues 3-1.
And the Ducks, dude, they're starting to get some pieces back, dude.
They lost Perry.
Yeah, I know, but they lose right when they're starting to get other pieces back, you know, and they just keep treading water as Ducks do.
Yeah, that is true. The Ducks are. But I think what's going to nip them in the bud, though, is that games played, and we'll go over to that in a minute. But the Ducks, like we said before, the Ducks win against the Blues. Maple Leafs get shut out by the Wild. I mean, Alex Stalock pitches a shutout.
Dude, Stalock is on a tear right now. Didn't they just – and he just beat the Flames the other night, like in extra frames, and got us the other night in extra frames. I mean, geez, man.
Right. Going over to
– I don't know that we can call him a backup anymore.
I wouldn't go that far. But maybe playing in his home state really has helped him out.
Right.
Going over to the Blackhawks and the Jets. Blackhawks beat the Jets 5-1. The Blackhawks kind of coming out there and really starting to make waves again.
And another former Shark in on this one, Tommy Wingles nets his fifth.
Yep. Avalanche beat the Panthers 2-1. Nobody really cares about either of those teams. Sharks beat the Flames 3-2 tonight. Predators shut out the Oilers, and the Oilers' woes continue. That team, I was listening to Hockey Central. They said going into this week was going to be really pivotal for them. It was going to be make or break.
Well, and there's no better fix if your team is on the shitter than to play the Sharks, which they do in just a couple of days.
The thing is, I don't know that they're going to be hanging around when they do play the Sharks. So I don't know.
What the hell happened to Edmonton? We saw what they did last year, and it was like, oh my God, the sky's the limit for this team. They get a good goal. And I mean,
Blue line depth is what's killed that team. I think a step back from Oscar Klefbom. I think not having Sekera there, having to give.
But you think they'd be scrambling right now to try to fix it? Somebody, like, I'm surprised. And I can't put this on the coach.
No, I put it
on the GM.
I put on Chiarelli. Chiarelli has made boneheaded after boneheaded moves. He's traded both Sagan and Hall. They're lacking left wing depth, and just a season and a half ago had one of the best left wingers in the game. I have no remorse for that team, and that ownership is can't see the forest for the trees. You know what?
Ian pointing out that injuries have been a big key, and Talbot has just been okay. Yeah, I mean, obviously, Talbot. I mean, goaltender needs to be your best player. So cliche, but it is true. But it's just, I don't think that I have seen a team. I can't remember the last time I saw a team that before the season started, so many people were up on, so many people. There was a lot of people that projected that Edmonton would lead the Pacific wire to wire.
Oh, I mean, the one that I look at was the year that Dallas got Antti Niemi. And it was going to be Niemi, and it was going to be Lettinen, and they had just gotten Spezza, and they had just really loaded up, and that team turned out to be a tire fire. I mean, that was
anytime you dump $11 million in net, that's going to be a tire fire,
right? And then to finally round it out, Lightning beat the Coyotes 4-1. Namestnikov, Braden Point, Kucherov, and Johnson all get goals. I mean, that team is just rolling. I mean, Kucherov with 22 goals. Dude, him and Ovechkin, the Russian wonderkins, are just battling back and forth for the Rocket Richard trophy. That's going to go down.
Is there any doubt that Tampa's not going to win the Stanley Cup this year? I mean,
Well, that's a good point. Peaking too soon. I mean, and then if they go in as a President's Trophy winner, does that mess with their heads? Maybe.
Certainly hasn't helped Washington.
Certainly hasn't helped Washington, exactly. But they are the most complete team right now. Injuries is the only thing that I could really see the really derailing that team. Going over to the standings real quickly, we're just going to go over the playoff teams. I won't round out the whole Eastern and Western conferences this time. Columbus leads the Metro Division with 41 points. Washington tied, but they have played one more game than Columbus at 41 points. New Jersey really nipping at their heels, though, playing one less game than Columbus and two less than Washington at 39 points. So the Metro, you know, it's very much up in the air, but all of those teams are really, really good. Atlanta,
you got 6 points separating, you know, first and sixth.
Right. Going over to the Atlantic, Tampa Bay, like I said, it's just the class of the league at 48 points, 31 games played. Toronto at 41 points with 33 games played. Boston still hanging in there. 29 games played, 34 points. You know, that team is just kind of just motoring along really unassumingly.
Yeah, I think both wild cards are coming from the Metro this year.
Yeah, and we're not – I mean, Pittsburgh is on the outside looking in, but we're quickly going over the wild cards. Islanders, 37 points, holding down first wild card. New York Rangers at 35 points, holding down second wild card. The only reason why they're in second wild card is because Pittsburgh's played two more games. They both have 35 points. The one startling – thing though, I'm looking at Pittsburgh, a minus 11 on that goal differential. That's not good for long-term success.
I wonder, is this a case of just Matt Murray not being his usual self, or is this a case of the Penguins just playing an awful lot of hockey over the last 2 years?
Yeah, I think it's the awful lot of hockey deal. I think that getting winning back-to-back Stanley Cups, that's tiring in itself, but I don't think we'll see a three-peat like we have with the Islanders or the Penguins of old. So I just don't think that we'll see that. Actually, Penguins of old only won two with Super Mario. So did they play for a third, though? I don't remember.
No. Oh, Skyler pointing out Matt Murray is injured again. Right. Oh, yeah. Didn't they take a flyer on Niemi for like a half a day?
They did. And then Niemi is now actually in Montreal. Whatever. Going over to the Western Conference, the conference that we all know and love, Nashville leading the Central Division, and it's really a dogfight between them and St. Louis at 44 points each. However,
well, that's been kind of a surprise because Nashville did not start off well.
Nashville didn't start off well, but man, they're coming back with a vengeance. They have scored more goals than St. Louis, and we think of Nashville as a really sound defensive team, but man, 106 goals for that team can score some goals. And we've talked about we haven't really talked about it, but the trade for Matt Duchene, really the team that comes out the best is Nashville. And I mean, out of all the teams that have made that trade, Ottawa's in the crapper. You know, the Avalanche, that's more of a long-term deal for them. But Nashville, man, Kyle Turris, really, really shrewd move by Poile. And really good. Winnipeg.
We have breaking news. Buffalo does, in fact, still have a hockey team.
Winnipeg is in the third, but they're no slouch either. They got 41 points. So St. Louis has got one more game played than Winnipeg, and Nashville's got two less than St. Louis and one less than Winnipeg. So Nashville really is in the driver's seat for that division. Moving over to the Pacific, Los Angeles has 43 points, 32 games played. Vegas has 42 points, 31 games played. So Vegas could creep up back into that first. It's going to be a battle between Vegas and Los Angeles for number one spot in the Pacific, believe it or not.
Oh my God. Can I just let me look this up very, very quickly. Yes, it is true. So you're talking about how close that is. Ladies and gentlemen, the Vegas Knights do in fact play the LA Kings on the 28th of this month. So just,
that's must-see TV.
Yeah, just really? In 2 weeks from today, that if this remains like that in the standings, that could be a fun game to watch, kids.
San Jose holding down the third spot with 37, a respectable 37 points. They did beat Calgary, so they got them kind of a little bit off their heels. Nice thing is San Jose's got one game in hand on Vegas and two games in hand on Los Angeles. So first place for San Jose is not much of a pipe dream. I mean, it could happen. I think the scoring is going to have to pick up quite a big bit of pace. And thank goodness that power play is really starting to pick up, mostly on the backs of the second power play unit. But still, you know, if we can get some more power play goals, this team's in really good position.
And we have, what is it? I see a 1, a 2. I'm looking, do we have a 3? No, I don't believe so. So we only played LA 3-4 times this year? No, 5 times. Okay, yeah, no. So we've already played them twice. So, yeah. So I'm seeing we get LA in about a week or so on the 23rd. That's going to be a huge game. Then again in the middle of January. So, yeah, those could be pivotal games.
Pivotal games. Going over to the wild card, Minnesota, 37 points. They've come back from a really rocky start as well. They are holding down first wild card with 37 points, 31 games played. Dallas in the second wild card with 37 points, 32 games played. Same amount of games as Chicago. Chicago has the same amount of points. Just the rows, if you're all playing that game, are a little bit, well, they're the same, but I think it's, we're going now off of, where are we going? What is that next tiebreaker? Gosh. I think we're maybe talking, because regulation overtimes are the same. Points are the same. It's not differential yet. It might be division, interdivision records, maybe, but that's kind of a little interesting. That those two are really, yeah, they're trading neck and neck. Calgary, like I said before, the Sharks get a little bit of breathing room with that win tonight. Like I said, we've got two games in hand over Calgary, but 2 points ahead of Calgary. And the same thing with Anaheim. And Vancouver lurking there a little bit, but I think they're starting to fade off. So
yeah, I mean, dude, there's only so much you can hand to like, dude, you have to give Besser and Horvat like the night off once in a while. Like they can't shoulder the entire team.
Right. Yeah. They can't carry old man Sedin's for that long.
Yeah. You want to talk about thankfully guys that are at the end of their contracts. Holy crap.
Right. Right. So quickly, if you haven't already done so, please subscribe down there. I think there's a little red button. It really helps us out. We're at standing at, I believe, 611 subscribers. And I at the beginning of the year, I really wanted to get that 1,000 mark. Probably going to fall a little bit short. Maybe unless we have a really, really good Stanley Cup run, maybe. I know that's a pipe dream, and I'm starting to sound a little bit like Puck Guy himself. But
The other thing, too, we're only 14 away from 2,000 followers on Twitter. So that would be awesome. Like, you know, tell a friend. And speaking of Besser and Horvat, that's who the Sharks face tomorrow. What are you looking for in this one?
Tomorrow, I think it's really going to be about how long the Sharks played and really relied on Thornton and Pavelski. I mean, it's just going to be about if the young legs can really drive the ship again. If the Sharks are able to get points out of that secondary and third, secondary and tertiary scoring, I think that they can definitely pull it out. Not really too worried about the talent matchups there. It's just going to be the legs of the Sharks. Are they going to be fresh enough? That's what I'm going to look for. And if you're looking for us,
well, I was going to just follow it up. See, for me, the thing is, we know Jones is getting the start tomorrow, and Jones has not impressed since he's come back from injury when we saw, you know, Dell start those two games on the Eastern roadie. So Jones, I think, could be a little bit of an X factor. Another X factor is the fact that Vancouver comes into this on a 4-game losing streak.
Oh, that smells like trap game. However, Horvat is out. So, oh,
well, see, I mean,
you catch a break there.
Yeah, you do catch a break there.
And so, Jonesy is playing in his hometown.
I just want to see Jonesy play like the Jonesy we're used to, not the one we've seen the last couple of weeks. That's all.
Right, right. And Rob Iman, Jones is not 100%. I think we can both agree with that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so now going over, please check us out on TealTownUSA.com. You can also find it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and YouTube. Uh-oh.
It's just Ian in the chat asking if Goldobin is still in their lineup. only if you count Matryoshkas.
Oh, my goodness. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think that this is where we sign off for the night. We're going to be back at you right again tomorrow. For everybody at TealTownUSA.com, I'm Eric Landy, and that's AJ Strong. Thank you, and we'll see you tomorrow night.